Blue 20! Blue 20!
It's Intentional Grounding, Chicago's best Bears breakdown and analysis.
Ice up, son. Ice up.
Now, they are WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue and the Chicago Sun-Times Adam Johns.
Welcome into episode 37 of Intentional Grounding. Pretty easy call here. It's our Tony Parrish episode, and we are in the middle of Bears minicamp this week. There's a ton to get to on this edition of Intentional Grounding. Adam Hogue and Adam Johns here with you. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. You can read us at WGNRadio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. And if you haven't already, find the podcast on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding. Please, if you like the podcast, rate it, review it. We appreciate you doing that. All right, so, well, first of all, we're here in the Hallis Hall closet, and I think someone's listening here at Hallis Hall to the podcast because there's a lot less clutter in here this week.
Now, I do know people in this building listen to our podcast. I've been told that. It's been called very entertaining. They really enjoy it. Now, whether that's them being honest or them just blowing smoke up my you-know-what, who knows, but people do listen to us, Adam.
All right, great. I guess that means we have to be careful what we say then.
Not really.
But yeah, there's all this clutter. It kept getting worse and worse here in the closet. Now this week I have plenty of room. It's great. So whichever listener came in down here and cleaned this up, we appreciate you doing that since this is our studio, and it should be kept up. All right, so little bit of news today. We're going to lead with the Alshon Jeffrey stuff, and we'll get to plenty of that. But the news today of Marquise Wilson suffering yet another foot fracture. He went down yesterday in practice with an injury, and unfortunately, the X-ray showed that he refractured that same foot that cost him the last five games of last season. This is the third straight year Wilson has suffered a significant injury. None of them have been season-ending, but they've all cost him parts of the season. And John Fox saying today he's going to have surgery Monday. He's going to miss all of the preseason most likely and could start the regular season on the PUP list. So a tough break for a guy entering the fourth year of his NFL career and a guy who has really just struggled to stay on the field despite showing at times flashes of being a talented wide receiver.
Let me ask you something. The injury doesn't happen. He goes to camp healthy. Is he on the bubble to you? Because I think he was to begin with. Health, whatever. If he was 100%, in great shape, whatever. I think he was still in the bubble because, one, yes, his availability, maybe other things crop up later. But those were just glimpses that you were talking about of being a productive receiver. And I know Cutler likes him. Cutler likes a lot of his receivers right now. That's what he's saying. But this was the guy in his fourth year, and I don't think he's been available enough and shown enough other than those glimpses. Even if he was healthy, to be no more than a bubble player going into camp. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I look at this like Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White are really the only two for sure guys among the wide receivers. I mean, I think a guy like Eddie Royal, as long as he stays healthy, he probably makes a team. But if he can't stay healthy in camp and they can't rely on him, I could see him possibly getting cut despite the money. So I put Marquise Wilson, Mark Mariani, all those guys in that same category. Now what this does is I think it, at least for those two guys, and Eddie Royal, and Mariani, maybe they can breathe a little bit easier now. However, you know, this also gives the opportunity to a lot of younger guys like Daniel Braverman and Josh Bellamy and Cameron Meredith and maybe Deontay Thompson. We're getting pretty far down the depth chart now, but there's a lot of guys here, and I think at this position, there's really only two spots that are set in stone.
See, I thought Braverman would be a relative lock because he is a draft pick. That does help his cause. It's a team that wants to get younger. He's a different type of receiver than the others. Even Eddie Royal, who's a slot receiver, but not like the slot receiver that a Danny Braverman can be or is projected to be if all goes well. To me, it's Cameron Meredith who really benefits from this. They're built similarly. You know, him and Marquise Wilson, both tall, lean. Meredith looks a bit bigger, but Meredith could play in special teams. He showed that last year. He was brought in by this regime, by Ryan Pace and John Fox, not Phil Emery, and that's very important to me in these evaluations when you're breaking down the roster. So Cameron Meredith's stock rises now where he could take that spot away from a Marquise Wilson.
Now, for what this means for Marquise, they're going to keep him on the roster because they can just put him on the PUP list. So he'll start training camp on the PUP list, and his status will be determined later, you know, once they see how quickly he's coming along. I mean, based on John Fox didn't really give us a specific timetable, but it certainly sounds like there's a chance he could be ready to get back to practice towards the end of the preseason or early in the regular season. But the fact is, you can put him on the PUP list, kind of stash him there for a little bit. And then they can kind of evaluate their roster. And, you know, IR, putting him on IR to return, I guess, could be an option too, although you might want to save that. Yeah. Although, wait, they changed that rule this year. You could put multiple guys on there this year. So, or you don't have to – you could certainly designate one guy, but you don't have to designate that person at the beginning of the season. So that gives you some more flexibility. There is a chance that Marquise Wilson doesn't play a game for the Bears this year, depending on what the roster situation looks like, what the injury situations are when he gets healthy. But there's also a chance that, you know, he comes back and they feel like I think they'd like him. I think they like him. He needs to stay healthy, though.
His availability is the same thing like a John Bostic. Just couldn't stay available, couldn't stay in the field. And look, this isn't an owie, as Fox would say. This is something that requires surgery. But that availability is an issue. And again, I want to stress the point that this regime did not draft him. They may like him, but Mike Groh's not here anymore. He's gone too. So all those people that were familiar with him when he was drafted, they're no longer here. Even Groh, who remained under the regime change. So I don't know where his true support is in this building.
In terms of other guys who have been hurt, John Fox doesn't really comment on those injuries unless it is, you know, severe and requires surgery. But there have been – we are allowed to take attendance every day, and there are guys like Ted Larson, Kyle Fuller, who's missed some reps here and there. Pernell McPhee, as we mentioned many times, has not been out there. These are all – am I missing anyone else? These are all precautionary is kind of what John Fox has been saying, precautionary – just being careful with these guys. So really, at this point, Marquise Wilson is the only significant injury for this team as they head into their pre-training camp break.
Well, we haven't seen Pernell McPhee. We've seen Kyle Fuller. We've seen Ted Larson. Not recently, but we've seen him. We saw Marquise Wilson actually injure his foot. But Pernell McPhee, who has been in this building but not on the practice field for our media eyes, we just haven't seen him. So I get the cautious thing with him. He is so valuable to this team. But when do you start to wonder whether or not this is more significant than they're letting on? Not like the Kevin White situation. I don't think it's like that. We know he had off-season knee surgery. We know he dealt with a knee injury last year. We know it needed to be cleaned out a bit. But what type of shape is he going to be in when training camp begins? This is a guy they want to lose some weight. This is a guy they're counting on to be a major contributor, a leader of their defense. We haven't seen him at all.
Yeah, and it's fair. And considering what happened to Kevin White last year with Kevin White, I think it's fair to wonder if Pernell could also start training camp on the PUP list. It's at least in the realm of possibilities at this point. I don't know if he will. I do think no matter what, though, he'll probably be limited a little bit in camp. I think there'll be days where he gets a day off. I think there will be certainly not a rush to get him on the field in the first couple preseason games. They need him, like you said, they need him all season long. And if it is a little fishy, though, because he just had arthroscopic knee surgery, right? It wasn't like a major procedure, and it was way back in February.
As far as we know.
As far as we know, exactly. So it is a little weird, but not the first time a veteran who they know a lot about has been held out of off-season work. The fact we haven't seen him at all, though, I do find weird.
But he is in the building. But Kevin White was in the building. And maybe the Kevin White thing has left a bad taste in some of our mouths. I get why teams are protective of injuries. But for now, I'll take them at their word. I think we've all learned from what happened last year. And this is a guy they can't mess with. Let's be honest. I mean, Leonard Floyd could be a good player, but Pernell McPhee is a major contributor day one, week one next season. They need him to be healthy. As much as they like Lamar Houston, as much as they like Willie Young, Pernell McPhee is so valuable to that defense.
All right, let's get to the Alshon Jeffrey conversation. He arrived at Hallis Hall. He's here this week. It's mandatory, so he doesn't get fined, which is what his camp said all along would be the case. He spoke yesterday. I actually struggled kind of writing about this yesterday because I don't know that he helped his case, at least from a PR standpoint yesterday. Certainly was pretty noncommittal, at times hypocritical, by saying, oh, the team's always first, when he clearly did not put the team first by skipping the voluntary portion of the offseason program. But at the same time, you know, the longer I cover the sport, the more sympathy I have for these guys that are putting their bodies on the line all the time, and they want to get paid. Now, again, though, he signed his franchise tag. He signed that tender. He's going to get paid at least $14.9 million this year. So that amount of sympathy I have for him isn't all that great. I guess I'm just curious what your reaction was to what he had to say yesterday.
You know, I get this whole team first thing. I do get it because you want players to put the team before them, but not often does a team really put players before the team. You know what I'm saying? Sure. I mean, players they come in and out. They're disregarded. It happens all the time. Players see this. Agents preach this. So, yes, I think he felt like he was doing the best thing in his interest with his agent's advice, and you can't fault him for that. Yes, it looks bad that he's coming back for the Cubs game. Yes, it looks bad he's coming back for a draft appearance for Marriott in draft time. None of that looks good, but he's got to look for himself. He's got to look out for himself. I will never fault a player for doing things like that because, I mean, look at the history of the NFL. This whole concussion cover, all the stuff. There's so many things you could rattle off. You can't blame him for doing that. I know it doesn't look good. And I think he knows it doesn't look good that he isn't here because of this whole team first mantra that everybody has. But can you really blame him for, you know, looking out for his own interests? I mean, his career, NFL career, is on average, what, 3.5? I mean, he could be done before you know it. He's got to protect his own interests.
I agree with you. I also think that you got to look at every single one of these franchise tag situations. And Alshon's is a little unique in that he has been productive but not always available. And so I can definitely see this from both sides. Yeah. And I guess I just – considering what happened last year with his injuries, unless he doesn't trust this team to take care of his body, I don't understand the strategy of not being here. And that's just this case. It seems to me like he and his agency are following the typical franchise tag script when I don't know that – like, this isn't Von Miller. Von Miller is nothing but productive and given the Broncos everything and always been available, and he deserves every bit of money he's looking for. Alshon has a lot to prove, and if I'm the Bears right now, I don't know that I'm signing him before July 15th. Given his history, I think it helps me more this year to put him in a situation where he has to prove himself every single week.
Well, let's talk about the Bears side a little bit more. You could see, all right, if Jeffrey wants to come back, there's like certain things here. They could do things to protect him, limit him like they're doing other players. But if he's healthy, he's got to be a full-go player out there, right? If I'm the Bears, this is what I don't like. Why is he working out with this trainer again? Because last year was the first year he worked out with this guy after playing two full seasons. So I was working out with this guy. His name is slipping my mind right now. Goes to this guy, gets hurt a lot last year, goes back to this guy to try to get a handle on his soft tissue injuries. Where was this report? In CBS Radio, or Kelly Crescembo wrote it, and this guy was kind of critical of the Bears' methods and team's methods. So if I see that, if I read that, if I know what happened last year and I know he was healthy the 2 years prior to that, I am kind of upset. And that's why you wanted to see what he came back like. And by all accounts, I think he looks good out there, looks in good shape, but you want him working with your own people, not some guy that he's worked with in Florida that didn't result in the best on-the-field production in 2015.
I agree, and that's one of the many parts of this kind of offseason saga that I just kind of scratch my head. And because it just that part of it just doesn't add up. And then yesterday he says that he's worked on some of the soft tissue problems. But then I pressed him a little bit more on, okay, what specifically have you been doing? And not that I was expecting him to lay out his routine every day, but he kind of then kept going back to, well, everyone gets hurt. So 99% of players get hurt. You can't avoid it. And then I said, so you've been just doing the same things? And he said, yeah, same things. And I don't know what to believe. That's another part of his hypocritical answers yesterday.
I attribute that to him being uncomfortable in front of the media. I mean, everybody was there to talk to them. Everybody who covers this team, TV, radio, print.
And by the way, that's something I wrote too. This is not a guy who's good at speaking,
no,
he never has been. So to dissect every little word he said yesterday, I don't find it worthwhile.
I don't think he wanted to talk either. I think he was hoping to sneak away.
But he didn't need to talk. There's no NFL rules at this point in the year that require you to talk, right?
No, but I think the team made it a point. I mean, you are here. You are a star receiver. You are a number one receiver. You have the franchise tagged. You know, and I think they knew. Well, we all know. I mean, media members went to search him out at the Marriott event. Media members went to search him out at the Cubs game, and he declined all interview requests. So this is supposed to be your number one receiver. So he's supposed to represent your team. So I think it was important and a good sign from the team that they put him out there. Yes, he didn't say the best things. Yes, he was hypocritical. Yes, he contradicted himself at times. But looking at his history of speaking with the media, I had low expectations of what he was going to say.
I don't know what the Bears' intentions were back in February. I don't know in March whether or not they were hoping to get a deal done. I guess technically right now I don't know if they want to get a deal done. But looking at what he's done this offseason, choosing to train elsewhere, train with the same guy that he just started with last year when all these injuries started popping up, not training here where we know Ryan Pace has invested so much in bringing the system of training and the nutrition and all that he clearly believes in, choosing not to go that route, and then even have that trainer pop up in that story you mentioned, kind of criticizing the Bears' methods. Again, I'm not in a hurry to sign this guy long term at this point. I want to see him produce, and so I know we've said this before on this podcast, but I'm starting to get to the point where I actually will be pretty surprised if there is an extension worked out before July 15th.
Well, I'm definitely in the same boat. Again, I get why he stayed away. I understand players and how they have to protect their own interests, because a lot of times they don't get sometimes what they're worth. Sometimes these teams fill out these contracts so they can easily get out of. I get where he's coming from, but I get where the team is coming from as well. I mean, they've only had 3 days, 4 days maybe, 3.5, to evaluate this guy. And missing that voluntary time where they could do all that, where he could be in the meeting rooms, where he could meet with the dietitian, where he could meet with the training staff and all that stuff, where he could meet with the Bears brass and coaches. He hasn't had that. He's condensed for 3.5 days. Yes, he's all smiles in the photos. Yes, his teammates are so happy he's back. And he looked pretty damn good out on the field. I mean, he is clearly – Kevin White's good, but Alshon Jeffrey's still at another level above Kevin White. But it's – I can't see where an agreement is reached at this point, again, because I don't know what the Bears will be able to gain and learn about this guy in 3.5 days.
I guess my point is I don't understand why he stayed away, because I think he's actually hurt. If he wanted the money, I think he's given the Bears more reasons in the last few months not to pay him. Yeah. And every situation is different. I mean, I do think that there are times – like Matt Forte probably benefited him to not be around here. He had most of the leverage in that situation a few years ago, and he ended up getting his contract.
Well, Jeffrey's gotten the leverage. There was no leverage to be gained by staying away whatsoever.
That's my point. I don't really get this. Yeah. Like I said, every situation is different. In some cases, it makes sense. Some cases, it doesn't. Like his playbook here just seems to be, well, this is what franchise tag players do. And I think it's hurt him unless he doesn't want to be here, which was another question that was brought up yesterday, and I don't really know if he answered that.
You know, I found it interesting. Peggy Kaczynski, the great Peggy Kaczynski, asked him what he liked about Chicago. He didn't name, like, players or coaches or anything like that. He mentioned the fans. They all mentioned the fans. Everybody mentions the fans if you ask them about the city they play for. The city and all that stuff, but it was no names were actually listed, and I thought that would, but again, it was curious, but it's a player who is rather uncomfortable dealing with the media, so he's a tough guy to read sometimes.
Yeah, and I noticed that too. I mean, as much as players like playing for fans, it's the teammates, it's the coaches, it's the guys around the organization that you see every single day. The culture within an organization that really is what you love about it. And that was an interesting answer I noticed as well. All right, so what else should we get to as mini camp kind of breaks up here tomorrow?
Well, we got to wrap up. I mean, tomorrow, Thursday's, it's a very abbreviated session, very limited availability. So what stuck out with me, there's the vibe of the defense is what I'm coming away with, and the banter with the offense. I mean, that was evident again today, yelling even amongst coaches. And I think we could talk about it because Fox was asked about it, and he thinks it's fun. I think it actually may be cultivated, promoted, any word you want to say, because there's some type of competition going on between this offense and defense. There's a lot of trash talk going on, and the defense has the louder voices. You can hear Willie Young from across the parking lot. He is that young, and it's good to see him out there healthy. But if I'm going to take anything away from this camp, it's the defense is looking faster, brasher, and meaner.
I agree. I think that's been seen, and I'm excited to see that.
Brasher is a word, more brash, but.
I'm excited to see these guys put the pads on and get after in camp because I think it's going to be pretty competitive. We saw some fights last year. The fights are sort of overrated, but as long as they're not completely counterproductive, like Martellus Bennett slamming Kyle Fuller to the ground a couple years ago, if they're part of the spirited competition within training camp, I think there's going to be a lot of that. I think for the most part, the offense and defense are respecting each other and legitimately know that they're getting each other better. But in the heat of the moment, there's been a lot of talk.
Yeah.
There's been some pushing and shoving, even without the pads on. And it's been pretty fun to watch already.
Any players stand out to you? I mean, we've talked about Daniel Braverman having a pretty good off-season program, but he had a tough day today. Kevin White, much better day today. We've talked about drops with him. I think he was more consistent today. But we talked about at length about Jeffrey, but I just want to point out again, in these 2 days that he's been here, he's looked like Alshon Jeffrey, a healthy Alshon Jeffrey, making catches in traffic, just being open. And Cutler's already keying on him, looking for him, because the other guys aren't getting open as quickly as Alshon Jeffrey is.
Well, I just think you're getting a glimpse of how this offense will be different if Kevin White, Alshon Jeffrey, and even Eddie Royal stay healthy. We saw a sequence yesterday, the running in the two-minute drill, where they're in a third and long situation, and Cutler drills one into Eddie Royal, who made a really tough catch. I forget which defensive back was on him, but they were kind of wrestling over the football. He pulls it in. They're running the line of scrimmage, and instead of spiking it, they throw up a fade to Kevin White in the end zone, and Kevin makes a tremendous catch. Another nice catch today. So Kevin's starting to show his potential, I think, in some of the types of plays he can make. But drops have been an issue. I talked to him yesterday about it. He said they were an issue his junior year at West Virginia, and it's just a matter of, you know, you're trying to impress people, and you get one step ahead of yourself, try to start running before you actually secure the football. And that's part of his game. He's a yak guy. He's a guy who's going to – sure, he can go up and make some great plays, but that's probably more Alshon's game. They're going to get Kevin in situations and space where he can catch the football and start running with it.
You just want him to get comfortable, because you could clearly see sometimes this is a guy who's pushing himself. He's trying to figure out the offense. You see him get corrected at times. There's a lot expected of him, and he, I think he feels it every now and then. And the drops, they're more magnified for him as opposed to a Daniel Braverman, who had a couple today, because he is Kevin White, the guy who sat out his entire rookie season, the number 7 pick of a year ago. So I want to see how he handles, one, the contact in training camp, and two, when those drops start to happen again, because, look, he's going to get hit now in training camp, and there's so much expected of him. There's pressure there. I want to see how he handles it.
One other takeaway, and it's really early to start talking about special teams because you don't really know what the back end of the roster is going to look like until the end of the preseason. But there's a lot more depth here. There's a lot more depth here, and this was something that kind of flew under the radar last season. But as poorly as they started, and John Fox has been very honest about how awful they were on special teams at the beginning of the last season, they finished pretty strong. They found guys to develop and added more speed to that unit. And with another offseason here to kind of get their guys in, I think they're going to have a lot of options. And Jeff Rogers, a special teams coordinator, is really going to have more options to choose from this year in training camp when they finalize that roster. So I think special teams, it's been a while, but I think special teams is going to be a better area this year.
Did you notice Pat O'Donnell killing the ball yesterday? I mean, he's got a young kid from Barrington, Ben LeCompte. I completely butchered his name, but
is it LeCompte?
I don't know. I know he's a good kid. I know my colleague Pat Filling did a story on him. But Pat O'Donnell, for a draft pick, you know, mega punt who became famous a couple of years ago, he was more consistent yesterday when they're doing their special teams work, and he was killing the ball at him. And you know, the Barrington kid was pushing him a little bit, but consistency, it was there for O'Donnell. And that's good because it was lacking at times last season. And we know he's got that powerful leg, but he's just got to use it better.
All right, the last thing from today, what do you think of Danny Trevathan's Super Bowl ring?
Oh, not as good as the Blackhawks. Three rings. And I don't mean that as a former Blackhawks writer. We could talk about Taylor Teravainen. How about that trade? Huh? But it just wasn't as... What do people say? They didn't have that bling like feel that those Hawks. The Hawks ones are gaudy, or the players couldn't even like wear him. I know Trevathan's a lot bigger than a Patrick Kane, so it fit a little bit better on his fingers. But as far as the gaudy meter, the Hawks rings beat that Broncos ring by, I want to say, not a landslide, but significantly, in my opinion.
If you need to see it, there's a photo of it up on WGNRadio.com, a kind of an up-close look at Danny Trevathan's Super Bowl ring. The story is that it was delivered to Hallis Hall today, and Ryan Pace brought it out to Danny on the field and kind of gave him an opportunity to show his teammates, hey, look at this big fancy thing that we're all trying to get. So kind of a nice
good move overall by both of them. By Trevathan and Pace. Smart move by Pace, I think.
So now the question is, will Ryan Pace ever be delivering another Super Bowl ring to...
He's got his own. He does have his own from the Saints. So, I mean, these things are so big now, but I'm sure the box itself is more expensive than, like, our iPhones we're using right now. But I thought it was a good move, a classy move by Pace, but it was even better of the significance of it, you know, the idea behind it is, here's the guy we like for a Super Bowl experience. Let's show everybody what he's earned.
And Trevathan has quickly become a leader on this defense. We're seeing that right away, bringing that some of that swagger and the chippiness that we've been discussing here the last few weeks. Well, that wraps it up for the off season already. They'll take a break at a month off. We will also take a break here on Intentional Grounding. Come back with at least one or two training camp preview episodes as we get closer to training camp, which is the last week of July, and then we'll get right back into the swing of things with the new season.
And I promise, the first training camp preview, we'll do it over those that goddamn Christian Hackenberg beers I owe you.
Just call it the Hackenberg. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that wraps it up for us here on Intentional Grounding. Again, follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S, and find the podcast on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding. Subscribe there. We'll be back in a few weeks to preview training camp, and then we'll be down in Bourbonnais and get things going on in New England from there where the Bears are going to practice. And before you know it, the regular season will be here. Appreciate you listening. Again, read all our coverage, WGNRadio.com/Bears and ChicagoSunTimes.com. Enjoy the summer. We'll talk to you before training camp.